Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart, and our update section now at the very top of the hour, the first 5 minutes, we're using it for something different than normal. This February is our telethon month, and we hope to get this done in 1 week, in which we try to raise the funds we need to confidently expect that the show will stay on the air in Denver on the radio for the next year. And our goal is $4,000 plus $1,000 in monthly pledges. And I want to give you an update of how we're doing. We have so far on the $4,000 goal, and that's people who give to that, that's a one-time gift. We have raised $1,200. $1,200, and we're so thankful to those of you who've given that so far. So we need another $2,800. We're getting there. And toward the $1,000 in monthly pledges, which is, of course, so significant because in a year that would be $12,000. So we have $110 so far. And I wanted to make an offer. So we're 11% toward our monthly pledges goal. That's great. And we're about 30% toward our, goal of 4,000. So we're getting there. And with your help, we will get there. I wanted to make a suggestion to you. If you've been thinking, oh, those Bible study albums, that sounds interesting, or the monthly videos, that sounds interesting, or the monthly sermons from... If you've been thinking about those, this might be a great time to go ahead and try it out, because we will count that during the telethon this week. We'll count that toward our goal. So, for example, the monthly videos are $24.95 a month, and we'd count that as $25 in the monthly pledges toward the goal. And then once a month, you get a video, and they're fun videos. You'll love them. Or a monthly Bible study album is $35 a month, $34.95, and we'll count that, of course. Or the Sunday sermons once a month for $24.95 a month. And then there's also the Best of Bob, the 8 best radio shows of the month, mailed to you or a brother who lives out of state or a friend for $49.95 a month. That's 8 hours, the 8 best radio shows of the month. And so, for example, I just heard from somebody who gets the Best of Bob, and they listen to the interview with David Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh's brother, and how they just loved that interview and went ahead and got the book and loved the book. And so the best, when you take the 22 shows out of the month, 21.6 shows every month we do, and you narrow it down to the 8 best, they're usually quite pretty fun, usually. And so that's an option. Some people have said, Bob, during a time like this, we just want to make a donation, and they might donate one time. There might be somebody out there who could donate $500. Boy, would that help. Perhaps someone could give $1,000 and help us break the halfway mark. We're at $1,200, and we're going to $4,000. And maybe somebody could give $50. Or 25. And then for the monthly pledges, if you could consider a $50 pledge or a $100 pledge. There might be somebody out there who can do 150 or 200. And we don't do this often, but in February, we spend a week or so, as long as it takes, to secure the show for the year on radio, on KLTT. And in September's, each September, we try to raise the money for the show to air on the internet for a year. And that way, during the year, we do our commercials in a rather brief commercial periods, and we don't have to focus too much on this. So if you can help us, please call 800-8-ENYART or go to kgov.com. Service with the weekend enough. greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Greetings. My name is Bob Enyar, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYAR. That's 1-800-836-9278. I want to talk more about the Bible and the flood and creation evolution tonight as we're looking forward to Monday night's show when we're going to interview Walt Brown, Dr. Walt Brown, who's the author of In the Beginning, the best book on creation and the flood that I've ever read. It's extraordinary. In fact, we're going to start stocking it. We've ordered our first case of 24 books. We're just so thrilled with this book and how it helps you understand creation and arms you to argue against evolution, and then the support for the flood, the global flood, and how the flood happened and how it formed our mountain ranges and why the continents look the way they are. Why do they look the way they are? What's with plate tectonics? What's with Pangaea? Were all the continents once one continent and they broke apart, plate tectonics, and you could fit them all together? Have you ever seen the picture of Europe and Africa stuck together on North and South America? And they look like they fit, right? And there is something to that, but it's been a little bit misrepresented. Because when you look at the picture of all the continents fitting together, they just subtly shrunk Africa by 35%, by more than a third. Oh, yeah, and they rotated Africa and Europe in two opposite directions. But there's something to it. They look like they fit together. So what's with that? Well, you study the Bible, you study geology, and read Dr. Walt Brown's book. We can talk about it here. We can try to answer your questions if you want to call in. There's good reasons why it looks like the continents on the west side of the Atlantic would fit in nicely with those on the east. There are good reasons. Why is it? Let's go to the phones right now. In Falcon, Colorado, Stan, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob.
Stan, how are you, Stan?
I'm doing great. I basically called to send you some money. We want to support you because we've listened for years and watched you when you were on TV.
Thank you so much.
And been up to the church once, but then we need to come back.
Well, you said we, so tell the audience who's your better half.
Laurie.
Laurie.
Yeah.
Stan and Laurie. In Falcon, Colorado.
Yeah.
Well, Stan, thank you so very much.
You bet.
We're just thrilled, and my call screener wrote the amount here.
Okay.
So I want to thank you very, very much for that.
Yeah. We also wanted to thank you for the video, the exploring.
Oh, unlocking the mysteries of life?
Yes. That was so awesome.
Isn't it the greatest video against evolution?
Amen. We've been sharing it with our unbelieving friends and just changing some lives, I think. And
yeah, because, people who don't want to listen to a sermon or a Bible study, you tell them, hey, this aired on Channel 6 here in Denver, or PBS around the country, and we'd like to know what you think of it. And so you pop in this DVD or VHS, and their jaws drop as they see the overwhelming evidence that life could not have evolved.
Yeah, it's awful hard to fight against the truth. There,
it's great.
So.
You know, Stan, I think I'm pretty optimistic as we come into the next, this century, because creation science is really still a nascent effort. It's in its embryonic stage here. It's just been birthed, really, in the last half a century.
Right.
And now the science tools, the educational tools, the videos, the magazines, the technical journals that we have are going to really do damage to the theory of evolution.
Oh, it's dying a fast death, I think.
In a bigger way than what we've been able to do so far, because the evidence is on our side overwhelmingly, and we're really getting the scientists to line up, and the tools, like that video, is just so great.
Yeah, Yes, it's amazing.
So thanks for all that, Stan. God bless you.
Okay, bless you, Bob.
Really appreciate that. So kind of Stan and Lori in Falcon, Colorado. All right, so you don't have to make a pledge or on the air, and that was $100 they get, right? $100. So we're up to $1,300. And that's a significant gift. So if you can call in on the air, off the air, go to the website, kgov.com, 1-800-836-9278. All right, so plate tectonics, that theory has got serious problems with it. Serious problems with plate tectonics that have never been resolved. There's not really a workable model on how the continents would actually move along on plates. And they've got sea floor spreading in opposite directions, right next to one another, where plates come up to one another and cracks in the ocean floor in the Pacific. And they say, well, through these cracks, the seafloor is coming up and spreading, only got cracks that come right next to each other. And so if these plates are moving out from the cracks, what's happening between the cracks? And you've got cracks meeting at all different angles. And the plates just can't be doing the things that plate tectonics was hoping they do. And they like that idea. They say, well, it moves at a few millimeters a year, and they've been moving for millions of years, and that's why the continents are where they are now. But there are huge holes with the concept of plate tectonics. Whereas Noah's flood explains, was there one continent originally? Well, yes, there was. That's what the Bible says. And it's good of the geologists to sort of figure that out somewhat. And what happened was the flood began with the fountains of the deep. When the great fountains of the deep broke open, that's what started the flood. And there was water under the crust of the earth. And the pressure built up in the crust, and we could explain how that happened, and the crust began to crack. And that crack unleashed force where you had about 10 miles of rock from the continent, from the entire earth, the landmass of the earth, sitting on top of a chamber of water, the underground water 10 miles down. Now, you know in the Bible how God says, and it's only over the last couple years I've come to terms with this verse where God said he put the firmament to divide the waters from above the firmament from the waters below it. This is going to get really interesting.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or kgov.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. So it's February, which means it's the time of the year for us to try to secure the next year's worth of broadcast. And we look at our budget and we see, you know, where are we at and how are we dealing with our monthly bills, and when we need new equipment here, which we need right now, do we have the funds to get the equipment? And we've determined, and we think in a frugal manner, not trying to take advantage of our audience in any way, that our goals for this fundraiser is $4,000, $4,000 plus $1,000 in monthly pledges. And those monthly pledges, they could either just be outright pledges, donations, or it could be the purchase of our monthly Bible study albums, or our monthly videos, or the monthly sermons. So if you can help, please give us a call. As we just heard from Stan and Lori in Falcon, Colorado, please call us at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or you could go online, KGOV.com, and up in the top right of the homepage, there's a store. You click on there and go to the Donate tab, and you could help out that way. So please, we need your help so that we have hopes of being here a year from now. One 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. I've wrestled with, of course, understanding the Bible and science and the flood and the fossil record for 30 years now, since I became a Christian in 1973. And it's only in the last 2 years, 2 years ago, dear friends, elders at our Denver Bible Church, Gordon Carroll and Erica Tormson, gave me a copy of Walt Brown's book. Dr. Walt Brown received his PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And the book, he's been basically working on this book for 25 years as he tries to use his engineering skills to understand our world, our solar system, the universe. And he's just flat out brilliant. He's brilliant. Dr. Henry Morris is the Copernicus of creation science, and Dr. Walt Brown is the Isaac Newton. There's no question in my mind now that Walt Brown is where history will find that Walt Brown is the most significant scientist of the 20th century. I think there's no question. As far as understanding our world, our solar system, galaxies, the universe, and origins, it's just, his book is extraordinary, and it keeps getting better because it's like a living work. His website updates the book from time to time. There's a couple new sections on his website, creationscience.com. And so anyway, back to what we're talking about. God says in Genesis chapter 1 that he created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so he creates the universe and the earth that we live on, because mankind was the pinnacle of God's creation. He made angels, too. And they're awfully valuable and important and eternal creatures, but angels could not reproduce. Human beings had the ability to reproduce. And so because of that, human beings are effectively the pinnacle of God's creation. We're made in his image and his likeness, two different things. And so he created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. And it's interesting that this is the first day, but it's not until the fourth day that God creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. So how is it that there's light? What was the light initially? And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And it's interesting to think what is that light that existed before the sun, moon, and the stars? What is it? And how could the earth be spinning and have light and darkness if the sun is not there? And, you know, there are the most extraordinary answers to those questions that Walt Brown has been working on. And I think maybe I just want to leave that out there for a teaser for now. What could the light have been before the sun was created and the stars? And how could it have been light and dark as the earth was rotating? And it was. And we could know with pretty good confidence, have a pretty good idea what that light was, I believe. But now let's go on. Then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And there's been this huge debate about what does that mean. And the King James translators, they went ahead and they pegged the firmament as they coined a term. They coined a term, firmament, which really was not at all, that wasn't a term in use. And they took a Hebrew term that's also used, translated into Greek frequently in the Septuagint, when the Old Testament was translated into Greek. That was quite an aid to us, because when we look at words and we're not sure what they mean in the Hebrew, one thing that we can do is we can go to the Septuagint, because that was 200 years before Jesus Christ. Rabbis, about 70 of them, translated the Hebrew scriptures into Greek. And so we have the original Hebrew scriptures, the copy that's come down to us through the ages, and we have the Greek. And the word for firmament, now I don't know Hebrew, but I could look up words in a dictionary, and the Hebrew word is rakia, if I'm even pronouncing that right. And what does that word mean? Well, it has a meaning. It's frequently used in the King James. It's got a couple similar words, rakia and bakia. Rakia and bakia. And their roots mean things like beaten, hammered out, plates. One time, the King James translates this term plates. Spread out, spreading out, stamped, stamped. And this word rakia is also closely associated with the word bakia, which means to break forth, to break open, to break out, to break through, to burst, to divide. It's interesting. It's translated divide twice, divided three times, ripped open. And here, God divided the waters from the waters, and he said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And so I remember back in the 70s, we're going to read the Bible, friends and I. We said, well, we understand the Bible, right? Well, let's read it and see what it says. And we come to that word, God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And we said, we have no idea what that means. What does that mean? We only got to the sixth verse. We have no idea what it's talking about. What is the firmament? And so you go on in the Bible here in chapter 1, a few times says the firmament of the heavens. So we think, well, that maybe that's the sky, because a lot of creationist scientists say this, there was a lot of water on top of the sky, up above the atmosphere, and it was like a water vapor, a canopy. And so we said, well, maybe that's it. But I have become convinced that that's not it. And the amount of water that could be up in a water canopy is so insignificant. 1,000th. One 1,000th of the water on the earth could be argued to be up in a water canopy, but the physics are completely against it. It doesn't work. You can't have a functioning water canopy. And if you had an inch or two of water up there and it came down, it'd be so insignificant. It wouldn't be Noah's flood flooding the whole earth. It'd be a little shower for a few hours, and that it'd be gone. And so why does such a significant portion of Genesis chapter 1 deal with this firmament and the waters that are above the firmament dividing the waters from below the firmament? And verse 7 says, "Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so." And so what's with that? Well, five chapters later, we're going to read about the flood. And the crust of the earth broke open, and the fountains of the great deep poured forth. The fountains of the great deep poured forth. And what are they? Where do they come from? They're brand new in the story. Are they? Well, no, they're not. They're described here in Genesis chapter 1 because the firmament divided the waters from the waters. Those waters that were under the firmament and the waters which were above the firmament. And so, you know, we go to Genesis chapter 6 and God tells Noah to build an ark because there's going to be a flood. And sure enough, there is a flood. And it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. But what's interesting, first we read that the fountains of the great deep broke open. And then it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And then after the rain stopped, guess what happened? This is really interesting. All right, now, Genesis 7, verse 11, that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Now, when it stopped raining, you'd think the water would stop rising, but it didn't. It didn't. Now, the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth, and the waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth. And the waters prevailed exceedingly, and the waters prevailed above the mountains which were covered. And until the waters prevailed over and over and over after the rain stopped, the Bible says over and over, the waters prevailed, they increased greatly. In verse 24, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. And that's when the waters, then we read the fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were also stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained, and the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of 150 days, the waters decreased. They began decreasing. So it's interesting that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but then the waters continued to increase for another 110 days. Now, why is that? But it stopped raining. Well, it's because under the crust of the earth, there was a massive quantity of water, 10 miles down, a half a mile to a mile deep, a sea of water, a sphere around the entire crust of the earth, 10 miles down. And when the crust broke, that water came up with such enormous force that it immediately began raining around the world. Much of that water and the rock it eroded went into outer space to form comets, meteors, and asteroids. And the water that went into the atmosphere came down as torrential rain. But then, once the earth was sufficiently flooded, the waters from under the earth kept coming to the surface, but they couldn't burst forth through the flooded earth, and so it stopped raining, but the waters continued. We'll be back in a moment. Bob Inyard here with an update now on our February telethon to keep us on the radio in Colorado for the next year, Lord willing. Our goal is $4,000 and $1,000 in monthly pledges. And we've got right now $1,300 toward the $4,000. So we need $700 to bring us to the halfway point and $110 toward the $1,000 in monthly pledges. So with $700, we'll reach our halfway mark for the $4,000. And that's not too much. Maybe I could call my mother. No, I shouldn't do that. Pops will hit me. They give as much as they could give. They can't give anymore. So many of the people who support Bob and Yart Live are dear friends. Give until it hurts, and they give and they give and they can't give anymore. They support Denver Bible Church, they support Bob and Yart Live, and they support other ministries. That's the kind of friends we've got. They're extraordinary. And so we don't go back to them and say, can you give more? We don't do that. But we on the air in February of each year, we ask the audience, can you help us to secure this program financially for the next year? Now, $4,000 and $1,000 a month wouldn't do that. That's not nearly enough to keep the show on the air. But we have an existing revenue stream right now. People purchase our materials, our Bible studies. They like them. But we struggle financially. We struggle. And this will help us see ourselves through for another year. So if you can be a part of this, please call us at 800-8-NYART. You could call right now. You call after the show tomorrow. But call now. Come on the show or just talk to our call screener, 800-8-NYART. So God made the firmament, which is the crust of the earth. And it sounds like it, doesn't it? The firmament. And that's what eventually broke. It's the thing that divided the waters from the waters, and eventually it broke open. And it's plates that were spread out around the crust of the earth, hammered out, over the water, the sphere of water that's 10 miles down in the earth. And the land, the crust of the earth, is called the firmament. Now, so God says here, he says he put the firmament to divide the waters from the waters. And he made the firmament. And then there's a reason for confusion, because God also called heaven the firmament. But later in this chapter, when God talks about putting the stars in the firmament, he clarifies it, Moses does, and he says, and there's a firmament of the heavens. And let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. So that the firmament itself is the crust of the earth, and that divided the waters from the waters. And the firmament of the heavens, which God says when he's referring to the sky and the solar system and the universe, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. And again, God set them in the firmament of the heavens. You see, it's interesting in verse 20, and let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. It's so interesting that after God speaks of the firmament as the crust of the earth, then, and he uses that to divide the waters from the waters, then he's going to make another firmament, the sky and the heavens, to divide the day from the night. And when we're on earth and we walk on the earth and it's solid, We like, some people don't like to fly, and they want to set their feet on terra firma. And we're on Earth, and we're standing on the ground, and we feel like we're on firm ground. Well, if you're a planet orbiting the sun, the Bible says that God hung the Earth on nothing, which is pretty insightful. But that planet, if it had a personality in a mind, it wouldn't feel like it's falling. It would feel like its feet are on solid ground. Even though it's hung in empty space, it's as firm and secure as could be. What's going to budge Jupiter out of its orbit? Hellbop? No. It's firm also. And so God has created a universe that's incredibly stable. And so I think that those are the meanings of these words. And I've hesitated for a long time, because when I first came to Walt Brown's book, I was biased against his book big time, because for 30 years I've studied Genesis 1 and creation science, and I believed in a vapor canopy theory. And the people who support a vapor canopy are beginning to back away from their arguments, because the laws of physics don't uphold it. And you'd have to make a vapor canopy above the atmosphere, which God supernaturally holds in place. And that's not what God did in creation. God created for 6 days and then he rested. And some people think God created and then he had to keep it all going with constant miracles. That would be like somebody building a fence. Like my father was in construction. He liked to build everything. It'd be like if he built a fence around our pool in the backyard in New Jersey and you had to hold it up. You had to stand there and hold it up. And if you walked away, it would fall down. And so I said, how do you like the fence I built, Rob? Well, Dad, you should have made it so it'd stay up by itself. Of course, when he builds a fence, it would stay up after a nuclear war, my father. It would be up for until the end of the earth. But when God made the earth and the solar system, he didn't have to then hang on to all the moons, otherwise they'd fall off or crash in. He made it so that it was functioning and self-sustaining, and so that on the seventh day he could rest. That's how he made it. So to make a water vapor canopy, it defies the laws of physics. It would not work. It just wouldn't work for so many serious reasons. And so early on, the creation scientists like Henry Morris and others, the first to propose a vapor canopy was not a creationist, but he proposed it based on ancient mythology. And he believed the earth was billions of years old. And so anyway, that idea, Henry Morris and others saw Genesis. God created the firmament and put the waters above and below. And they said, well, maybe a water vapor canopy is what caused the flood when it came down. But what generally is not noticed is God talks about the firmament, the crust. It's firm, and it eventually broke open to divide the waters from above it with the waters below it. And then he says, now there's a firmament of the heavens, and that is used to divide the day from the night. So that since God called the heavens the firmament, because that was firm too, right? It's amazing how God can do that. And so he did it. So then he puts on the earth, he puts Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And it is so cool what God did with the Garden of Eden, and how that plays into the flood and what triggered the flood. But are they okay? Those callers, are they coming on the air? All right. What do I what do we have here? $25 a month from Jeremy and Wendy. Wow. From anyone else? They have any kids? Who do we list here? Thank you, card. Little Andrew. All right, that's thank you, Andrew. Well, and your parents. That's 25. So a couple called in from Denver, and my call screener told me here they have a little boy, Andrew, newborn, and they're giving $25 a month. So that's $135 a month. Wow, we're getting there. That's 13.5% of our monthly goal. Thank you so much, guys. And we're at $1,300 toward our $4,000 goal. So 4,000 one-time donations, and the other, we're shooting for $1,000 in monthlies. Okay, so Genesis chapter 1 tells us God created. And then chapter 2, we read about the Garden of Eden. And what's interesting about that garden is that we learn things about it. Like, for example, there were two special trees in the midst of the garden, and a river went out of Eden, and from there it parted and became four riverheads. And that river, and the Bible gives us their names, including the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, and they're not the same as those rivers today, because the flood wiped out the surface of the earth, recarved the earth. And so when Noah and his family got off the ark and they started to explore in Turkey, and they found they were in a river valley, a drainage valley between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. Well, two great rivers, and they had to give them names. So they named them the same as the rivers were named before the flood. Two of the four. And what's interesting is that the Bible says repeatedly that in the center of the garden, a huge quantity of water came out of a natural spring. And it was so much water that it not only watered the garden, which was nothing compared to the rest of its job, then it flowed out of the east end of the Garden of Eden. And from there, it parted and became four massive rivers. And those four rivers watered the entire earth, because it didn't rain back then, before the flood. And so those four rivers watered the whole earth. And then Adam and Eve sinned, and God cast them out of the garden, and he put a cherubim at the east end of the Garden of Eden. Why at the east end? That's where the river flowed out. Why there? So that man could not go back in and eat from the tree of life. Why didn't God want Adam and Eve to eat from the tree of life? Why was it there? Well, in the book of Revelation, the tree of life, we find, is at the New Jerusalem. And it's necessary because God gave us physical bodies. And because they're physical, even if there's no death or disease, our physical joints begin to wear out gradually. And so God either could do miracles on demand or give us a tree of life for the healing of our bodies, for restoration. All right, Bob Enyard here. Now, our phone number, this is a live commercial break. You can use it. We got two calls during the show, one with a one-time gift and the other a monthly pledge. So you can use it before the end of the show to call in, and I'll be happy when the show's over. I'll be happy to answer the first two calls that come in, if possible. So you can either call right now if you'd like to help us meet our goals, our telethon goals of $4,000 and $1,000 in monthly donations or monthly subscriptions. And so anyway, that number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or if you go to kgov.com, for those who are not real familiar with the web, you go to our website, kgov, and on the top right of our homepage, there's a button to get Bob's materials, our online store. You click on that, you go to the store, the kgov store, and that's run by bCentral, which is a Microsoft e-commerce service. And you could look at our videos, literature, audio tapes, clothing, specials. And there's another department called donations. And if you click on there, you could make a donation, a one-time or a monthly donation to help us with this goal. So those are the ways that you can help if you'd like to. And some people, you know, when they're interested in helping and supporting and they sort of are sitting back and waiting to see, well, what's going to happen? Is anybody going to give anything here? I'm not going to be the only one or the first one, and I want to see what's needed. Well, we would like to get this done with this week so we don't have to do this through February. So if you can call now, boy, would it be appreciated. All right, Bob Enyard here. Now, let's see. I'm just looking at our store. We just had someone order Unlocking the Mystery of Life on DVD from Gilbert, Arizona. Tom M. Tom, thanks for that order. And that is such a great DVD. He's going to love it. When he gets done watching that DVD, he's going to dance on his kitchen table. That's how good that video is. That is so good. You have to watch it and then show it to your friends and especially to your enemies if they're evolutionists. It is so good. Okay, so God made the Garden of Eden, and he put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the midst of the garden, and that was basically the door out. God, if a man loves a woman and he wants to have a relationship with her, and so he marries her, he builds her their dream house, and he doesn't include any doors or any windows because he doesn't want to take the chance of losing her. So is that love? He put her in a prison. That's not love. That's unhealthy. That's sick. So you marry the woman you love, and you build her a dream house, and there's the front door and the back door. And there's a bay window with sliding windows, and there's the garage door with a double door on it. So she has every possible way of escaping if she wants to. And that way she could stay there because she loves you and her love is freely given. And you love her and you're not unhealthy or sick. And God is not an unhealthy God. So he made Adam and Eve, and in the midst of the garden, he gave them the way out. If you want to live with me and love me and obey me, you can eat anything you want to eat. I created this paradise for you, but just don't eat of this tree. If you eat from this tree, then you will have separated yourself from me. And they sinned, and they ate from that tree. How long after they were created did they do that? Well, we know, we have some evidence. We could certainly get the time frame. And I think if you listen to our Bible study, Genesis the Fall, I think we can peg it when they sinned. But we know that Adam and Eve did not have any children before they sinned. So Eve was not pregnant at the time of the fall. We know that. She became pregnant after the fall. So that puts, I think, an outer boundary to how long they lived in the garden before they sinned. At any rate, that was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Then there's the tree of life. What's the tree of life doing in there? Well, God gave Adam and Eve physical bodies. They're not just spirits. They're body, soul, and spirit. So if Adam eats, after a while, he's going to get hungry because his body will consume the food and metabolism works. And if Eve makes Adam a cup of hot chocolate and he doesn't get to it right away, then the chocolate's going to cool down. And if they walk on the ground, there's going to be friction. And they'll have hair, which are cells from their body, that dead cells that go into making their nails and their hair. And then their hair, I imagine they'd get a haircut now and then. Or the epidermis, some cells will fall off their outer layer of their skin as their skin constantly reproduces the cells and it stays nice and supple and young and healthy. And the older cells fall off. And bacteria will eat that stuff, and God created a great system. But because they're physical, and because there's friction even before the fall, their bodies would wear a bit. You walk and you work for 1,000 years, and your bodies will wear a little bit. And so you eat from the tree of life. And when you eat from the tree of life, then the wear and tear on your body is it's restorative. It's like the fountain of youth that the explorers were searching for. Right, Ponce de Leon, they wanted the fountain of youth. They were looking for it in Florida. Well, it wasn't a fountain. It was a tree, and it was in the Garden of Eden. And the Bible starts with that tree, and it ends with that tree. In the book of Revelation, that's where it is. And after the creation of the new heavens and the new earth, that tree is there, and its leaves are for the healing of the nations, and it has fruit, 12 different kinds of fruit. Each fruit comes ripe once a month. So why did God put that tree there, the tree of life? So that people can eat from it. And God doesn't have to do miracles on demand to keep our bodies in shape as we live forever with physical bodies. That's what the tree of life was for. So once Adam and Eve sinned, they immediately were separated from God spiritually. Death is separation. So they died spiritually. They're separated from God. And eventually they would die physically, in that their bodies would separate from their soul spirits. And then after they died spiritually, they're heading toward the judgment day, and it's either heaven or hell for all of eternity, whichever they've chosen. If they don't want to live with God, God's not going to force them and close all the doors and windows. So they could live without God, and we call that place hell, or they could live with God. If you put people who hate God, if you let them go to heaven, they'd be more miserable than if they're in hell because they hate God. It's like putting having Hillary sit in on a Promise Keeper session. Think she'd enjoy it? No, she'd rather be in hell. And they say, I'd rather go to hell. Well, you will. Okay, so God put the tree of life in the garden, and when Adam and Eve sinned, he kicked them out of the garden, and he put a cherubim, which is more than one cherub, at the east of the Garden of Eden. Why at the east? Because the Garden of Eden was like a hidden paradise. It was surrounded by great walls, like natural mountains. And think of a hidden paradise. Isn't it a neat thought? You could make a movie about it. You could write a book. There's only one way in. Oh, yeah, we do have movies and books like that. And so this paradise where there's only one way in, it's actually the Garden of Eden was a picture of heaven and eternity and paradise with God, because there's only one way, Jesus Christ. There's no other way in, just God's way. And so God made the Garden of Eden so that it was surrounded by natural walls and the entrance was in the east. And so that's why when the water bubbled up from in the center of the garden and it watered the garden, especially the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life, and then it flowed east out of Eden, and from there it split into four rivers that watered the entire earth. Fresh water to water the entire earth. All the drinking water for man, the animals, the trees, that was the center of the hydraulic system. Was that river that bubbled up, that natural spring from out of the center of the Garden of Eden. And so God put the cherubim at the east of the Garden of Eden because that was the only way in. If the angels were on the east, well, Adam and Eve, they only had to sneak around to the west and come in that way and go to the middle of the garden. But no, they couldn't get in that way. There was one way in. So that's why God only had to put the angels on one side. And then how long did the tree of the knowledge of good and evil stay in the garden? How long did the garden last? Well, it lasted for 1,600 years. About 1,650 years until Noah's flood. The Garden of Eden was destroyed in Noah's flood, as was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It was destroyed at the time when the earth's crust cracked. And the Bible talks about that, but it's, you know, Genesis chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, more popular. You get deep into the middle of the Bible, and the books become less well known. And so most Christians haven't even read Ezekiel chapter 31 and what that has to do about the story. But what happened was God had put Adam and Eve in the garden to till the garden. And when they were kicked out of the garden, then there was no one there to till the garden. And there was a huge spring that came up, underground waters that watered the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the other trees, and then flowed out and watered the whole world. But what happens to a spring surrounded by the biggest, most beautiful, perfect trees that ever lived? That spring in the midst of the garden, with no man there to till the garden, and those trees grew for 1,600 years. What happens to that spring? Well, its roots begin to bind up the opening of the spring, and eventually it's choked. And that's what we find out in Ezekiel chapter 31. Before the flood, there was a drought over all the earth. A drought so that the trees themselves wilted. And the men of the earth were angry at God and shaking their fist at God because the water had come from the garden of God and now the water had stopped. And they were mad at God. In Ezekiel 31, we find out, and that, by the way, that chapter, it's an entire chapter about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, about the tree that's in the midst of the Garden of Eden. That's what it says. And it's comparing Pharaoh to that tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so the men were so angry because of the drought, and they were shaking their hands at God, and they were demanding water. And God basically said, you could read it in Ezekiel 31. God said, you want water? I'll give you water. And all that drink water were comforted in the depths of the earth. They also went down to hell with the tree. Whoa. So there was a drought over all the earth. $100 and the plot? What does that mean? Tell me what that means. Somebody ordered the plot, plus a $100 pledge toward the 4,000. Oh, wow. That's incredible. Okay, so that's $1,400 toward the 4,000. And we're now at, toward our $1,000 in monthly pledges, we're at 13%, $135. So if anybody out there now, I'd like to take the next couple calls that come in, if there are a couple calls. I hope I'm not just sitting here forced to watch Fox News. That'd be anticlimactic. Yeah, I'd like to sit here in the studio and take your call. So if you can call us 1-800-8-NYART and help us meet these goals so we could dispatch with this effort this week, wouldn't that be great? We don't have to go into the rest of February. But we still have a long way to go. We need $600 more to get 50% toward our goal of 4,000. So $600. You know, there might be somebody out there that could give 500. Oh boy, that would be huge. And there might be somebody out there that could pledge 100 a month. That would be huge. So, and also, hey, if you like this show, I hate doing this. So you can help us get over it. Hey, this is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.